Well, I find out that Brian actually lives only a few towns over, so now he has really no excuse. I'm thinking you're one of these Hartford County guys who had to drive all the way down. Like, we've had state police come in or some of the other commissioners, and they'll come in and they're like, yeah, it's a trek. You're in Fairfield. You have no excuse anymore, Brian Caffarelli.
None whatsoever, no. He's on the way to work, so... Yeah. I'll head out after this.
It's good to see you.
I'm glad to be in studio with you.
I am very glad to have you here, too. I mean, obviously, I know you were here actually a couple months back with the Attorney General. You guys were recording some of those PSAs, which are great. So we hear you a lot. And obviously, you and I have talked on the phone many times. So it's good to put a face to the voice.
Yep. Yeah. That's great. You too. Likewise.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. And again, Brian Caffarelli is here, the commissioner for the Department of Consumer Protection. And, you know, it's interesting, Brian. I was reading something a few weeks back, and it was talking about two more conditions that have now gotten approval in Connecticut to allow people to access, patients to access medicinal marijuana. And it was interesting because one of the two conditions that was added to the list was autism. And for me personally, my listeners know, my younger brother is on the autism spectrum. So I'm always, you know, sparked whenever I see anything with autism. But it kind of made me think, just in general, how do conditions end up getting the approval to allow people to get access to medicinal marijuana?
Yeah, certainly. And it is back in the news for that very fact that we did add two new conditions recently. And one of them being the autism spectrum disorder. And, you know, the medical marijuana program in Connecticut is, you know, the leader in the nation. We were one of the first, and we really set the model, and a lot of states have based their programs off of ours, and it's been very successful. And, you know, I can't take the credit for that. It was people who have been there for a long time and put a lot of thought and effort into it. And part of the process, as you asked about, is qualifying conditions. And so we have a board of physicians, doctors who come from all different walks of life and areas of practice that volunteer their time to consider these petitions for qualifying conditions so that people can use medical marijuana as a drug to treat various conditions. Right now, there's 42. So
right.
From the inception of the program till now, there's 42 before these two that have been added.
They must get so many petitions.
They do get a lot of petitions.
Like, I would think hundreds on an even daily basis.
I don't know the number, but and of course, it was a lot more prior to
when
adult
we made it
use.
Legal. Sure, sure.
But, you know, there's still a lot of benefits, which we'll get to, in becoming a qualified condition and being a medical marijuana patient. But, you know, I just wanted to tell you that, you know, it's really, there is a process. It's on our website, and petitioners, which are mostly people who suffer from a certain condition or their doctor, or that would fill out a petition.
Oh, okay.
And anybody can do it, though. And if the petition meets all the requirements, it will then be referred to the Board of Physicians. They meet at least twice a year. The commissioner, by virtue of the office, chairs that. But, you know, I am not a doctor. I don't have subject matter expertise. I'm kind of the traffic cop.
You're the messenger. No, yeah. I understand that. I get that.
Just
I understand.
Make sure everyone shows up. But they are very, very intelligent and qualified doctors who consider these things. And so they review the petitions, supporting documentation. I mean, if you look at them, they're all public documents and online. I mean, they are voluminous, and just really people put a lot of time and effort in putting these things together. And then there's public comment and testimony. And then the board will make a recommendation as to whether or not they think that it should be a qualifying condition.
Interesting.
So, and then we heard two petitions in the last meeting, which was a couple weeks ago, and they were both approved. So,
oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. And those are the two we're talking about today.
Yeah. So
okay.
One
interesting.
Being the autism spectrum disorder, and the other was female orgasmic difficulty disorder.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's interesting when you hear that there are 42 that were approved. I'm glad that you kind of explained it there, Brian, because when I first read that, that is one of the things I was interested in, especially because it is now legal. So basically buy recreational marijuana as long as you're of age. I thought, why even bother with petitioning for it? Because it's pretty accessible unless you have, you know, people who are children who could really benefit from it. So that's really interesting. And the fact that they only meet about twice a year probably also factors into why we only have about 42 conditions that qualify. I don't know if that's true or not. But I'm thinking we'd have more if it was like a monthly meeting per se, or there were more opportunity. I don't know.
No, I don't. Well, they can meet more often. And in fact, in the beginning, they did. That's, you know, the minimum that they will meet by statute at least twice a year to consider any business before them.
Mm.
And so there can be more meetings, and there have been, especially in the beginning.
Yeah,
I don't think that, you know, I think we're in line, maybe slightly ahead of other states in terms of the conditions that qualify. But it's pretty robust. If you look on our website, kind of the areas that this this drug can treat and that have been qualified by these doctors, there's 42. And then I should point out, too, and then 11 of them, some are the same that are in the adult, some are particular,
okay,
but for children. So those under 18.
Oh, interesting.
So there are a few, 11 of them that have been approved by the Board of Physicians to treat conditions for those individuals 18 and under. I think it's not, you know, there are specific age ranges in that under 18, but.
Interesting. Yeah. And again, Commissioner Caffarelli is here. We're talking about medicinal marijuana and how conditions end up getting approval to allow patients to now access it. So it's interesting, too, Brian, when you look at it. I was glad that you know, I love how you were like, listen, this is it kind of, I don't want to say above your pay grade, but it's like, hey, this, I'm just kind of the messenger here. I get it. Listen, I tell the news. I don't make the news. So I got you with you.
Yep.
But I am curious, you know, like when I was reading, going back to the autism, when I was reading, I think it was in, I want to say, the Connecticut Post. Don't quote me, though. But I think when they wrote their article about it, they had said when you look at the national data, there's no, I want to say, concrete data proving that marijuana is like a for sure, I don't want to say cure, but like a remedy for autism or will make it better. But it's the symptoms that people experience if they have, you know, autism or they're on the autism spectrum disorder. They have that. Could you talk maybe a little bit about, like, is data required when you put in one of these petitions? You know, do you need the research to back that, or?
Yeah, for sure. You know, the petition requires that the medical condition or treatment of the disease be outlined with specificity. The negative effects of current treatments that are, you know, on the market, and the conventional therapies that are alternative to those current treatments. And, you know, some of the current treatments out there could cause really, really bad side effects.
Mm.
And there might not be any alternatives of, you know, conventional therapies. And then they have to go further and provide general evidence of support for medical marijuana treatment. And then in particular, scientific evidence of support that medical marijuana treatment. So studies regarding beneficial or adverse effects from the use of marijuana in patients with a condition, and then professional recommendations for medical marijuana treatment of that condition. So they will provide letters in support of the petitions from physicians or other licensed healthcare professionals knowledgeable about the condition or disease who have, you know, who can opine,
okay,
whether or not the medical marijuana will be effective in its use. And so there are, like I said, these petitions are quite lengthy. It takes oftentimes, you know, sometimes years if you look at them,
yeah,
to put these together. And there's a lot of evidence and background to support their petitions. And those that qualify, the doctors agree. In this case, it was unanimous on both accounts that it would be helpful. And so, you know, that's the process. And so then individuals can go get certified by a licensed healthcare professional that medical marijuana would help them for this specific, if they have one of these 42, now 44 conditions, and that would give them access to the medical marijuana.
I also think it's really, it's actually really encouraging for people who are kind of on the fence about marijuana, and total respect, I understand that, absolutely, both sides of it. I think it's really great that it didn't become like a free-for-all. So, like, even though we've made recreational marijuana legal in Connecticut, I love that we have still kept this established established board, these professionals, and that they take this work really seriously, and they're not just going to check mark, you know, whatever, it's available, so why not?
Right.
Like, I do love that we're still making that a priority and making sure, especially for medical reasons, that we're not just pushing everything through. I think that's actually a really great thing. So I'm okay with 44.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that for now. You know, I'm okay with that.
That's it. You know, to your point, that was paramount in, you know, when preserving the medical marijuana program when adult use cannabis was passed.
Mm-hmm.
And so the legislature administration were very, and the agency were very thoughtful in how they did that. And I think they've done that quite successfully. And so, you know, if I can just expand on that a little bit, I mean, one of the things that if you do qualify, you know, if you have one of these qualifying conditions and get a certification, which, by the way, now is free. So there used to be a charge for, you know, to get the certification from our agency. But as of July of last year, that fee is waived medical patients or their caretakers do not have to pay for that. Currently, there's about 40,000 patients that are certified in Connecticut. And what that does is it gives them access to, well, first of all, tax-free drug.
Right.
Because drugs are tax-free in the state. And so when they buy medical marijuana at a dispensary or a hybrid facility, they are not subject to the sales or excise taxes.
Interesting.
And they also receive priority at hybrid. So establishments that sell both adult use and the medical marijuana.
So if they have like a shortage or something, you have priority over.
And there's certain hours sometimes.
Okay.
It depends upon. There are preservation plans in place for those that were typical, that were legacy, if you will, medical marijuana dispensaries who became hybrid.
Okay.
So to make sure that they were taking care of the patients and prioritizing them, they can purchase more, you know, supply for their... on a monthly basis, and they can have access to higher potency drug because, you know, for specific conditions, sometimes it takes higher potency.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Commissioner Brian Caffarelli is here from the Department of Consumer Protection in Connecticut, and let's switch gears. Well, I have a few more minutes with you, Brian, because I know your department has also been working hard on educating people in scams and scam alerts, obviously. SNAP benefit scams. Really? It's a huge problem, huh?
Yeah, you know, it's really sad. And thank you again, Melissa, for allowing me to be here. It's one of the things that, sadly, we have to talk about a lot are these scams and educating people so that they can avoid them. Because everybody always thinks, so that's happening to someone else. It happens to... And scammers just come up with new and innovative ways. You know, quite frankly, I wish they would use their skills to do something productive in society.
Good for the world. I say that to the Better Business Bureau all the time. I'm like, man, we'd have superheroes. We'd have Spider-Man and Batman all over the place if we could make scammers do good, right?
It's phenomenal what they come up with. And they tend to, and it's just heart-wrenching because they tend to target the most vulnerable populations.
Yeah.
And so you'll see it with seniors. And lately, we've been seeing it with people who have SNAP benefits or EBT. And so
I heard
a story, and it just really sent chills when a woman was in the grocery store and she was with her kids and had a cart full of groceries and went to check out with her EBT card, and there was no money on it. And so they had to put all the groceries back. And what had happened was her SNAP card had been skimmed and she lost all the money in the account.
That's awful.
So, I mean, it was just devastating to her family.
And it probably felt embarrassing.
Yeah.
Like, that's awful.
Yeah, no.
Oh,
and so
awful.
It's, so sadly, it's something that we're talking about now is that there are these EBT information and SNAP benefit scams. And they're using these skimmers, which, you know, I gave you a picture, and it's kind of hard to conceive.
It's those little machines for you listening at home or in the car right now. It's those machines that you see when you get to the checkout counter, when you go to a grocery store, you know, wherever you are. And it's the machines where you can either insert your card with the chip, you can slide it, you can usually even scan it on top of it sometimes. Like, I mean, there's a million ways to now pay with a card. So these machines, that's what you're talking about.
Right, but so if you see there, they actually have a lookalike that snaps right over it. That's the skimmer. paper.
This part.
Yeah. So they have one that looks exactly like that machine that snaps on top of it.
That is so
shady. So they'll go
shady.
Into stores under the guise of being a repair person or whatnot. And they will place this illegal device on an ATM or retailer's card swiping machine.
So other than this like little, I don't want to say sticker, but like, is there any way to spot that this has been tampered with?
You know, it's hard.
Because I didn't even realize that's what you're talking about. You're like, actually, look at the picture, Melissa.
No.
But I am, but I didn't see
it that way.
It
is hard to tell, but sometimes it looks a little thicker, or it's clunky or hard. And so, no, you don't know. And so really, I mean, some of the ways to avoid it without, you know, detecting that you actually are encountering a skimmer is to avoid simple pins, keep your PIN and card number secret. Beware of phishing, you know, because in addition to these skimmers, people will reach out and claim to be from state agencies. And so a state agency will
never
contact you and ask you for your personal information or any money whatsoever. And another thing that they're recommending is changing your PIN often so that if, in fact, it is skimmed, that you, they say to change it as frequently as right before you use it and right after. I know that's kind of onerous, but really that's what the feds are saying and that's their recommendation.
I mean, to me, I think, it can be kind of a pain, but at the same time, when you have everything taken from you or when you have to go through the process again or replace things, I just know from having credit cards, having the identity stolen and all that, it's like to reorder it, get it in 7 to 10 days, now realign all my bills with that credit card. It's a pain. So if it means changing that PIN, you know, whatever, fine.
But there is some good news in this whole story is that in Congress in 2022, December of 22, they passed this Consolidation Appropriations Act, which allows state agencies to use federal funds to replace stolen SNAP benefits.
Oh, that's amazing.
So if this has happened to you, you can apply through Department of Social Services to receive those. But we encourage you to do that as soon as possible because it runs out this fall. So
happened
to you.
So where do they go?
The DSS. I'll give you the website, the Department of Social Services.
Okay, because I'm going to get both websites, the one that Brian had mentioned in the first half of this interview, if you wanted to check out more information on the board of doctors, the people who look at medicinal marijuana and conditions that get approval. We'll get that website, and we'll also get the website you're talking about here if people need to approve because they had their money stolen from them, from their SNAP benefits, their EBTs. We will put both of those links on the podcast that we'll post later this morning people can get it. Commissioner Caffarelli, thank you so much for all of this information. And like I said, you're in trouble now that I know you're so close. I'm
going to
probably make you come in more.
Yeah, no. Thank you.
I always appreciate
great.
It. You're the best. Thank you, Commissioner.
Have
I appreciate
a good day.
It. You too.
Bye-bye.
Commissioner Caffarelli here from the Department of Consumer Protection on WAC.